The Titans of Trial podcast is sponsored by the Florida Justice Association Research and Education Foundation, promoting the study and understanding of Florida's civil justice system and how its preservation benefits consumers, victims, and all Floridians. Learn more at floridajusticeassociation.org.
From the Florida Justice Association, these are the Titans of Trial.
People wanted me to be a librarian, they wanted me to be domestic, they wanted me to do appeals, they wanted me to do family law, but not to be a trial lawyer because they thought a woman cannot succeed in moving a jury to make a verdict in her favor. Can't be done.
Diane Weaver talks about breaking the glass ceiling and her key to trial success.
One of the things I try to teach lawyers is that you do not want to deal with sympathy with the jury because sympathy makes us feel uncomfortable. You want to deal with empathy.
And about balancing her professional life with her family life.
Every night I would come home, I would cook dinner, and they would sit at the table in the kitchen and do their homework, and we had that time together.
Welcome to Titans of Trial, featuring the personal stories of the men and women who've made a difference to the practice of trial law in Florida. I'm Paul Jess, Executive Director of the Florida Justice Association. There's an old saying that lawyers change the world one case at a time. Diane Weaver of Jacksonville is certainly proof of that. She's earned a reputation both in the courtroom, representing her injured clients, but also on the boards of state and national brain injury associations as a compassionate expert. Diane Weaver is not only a top trial lawyer, she's a pioneer. She was the only woman practicing jury trial law in Fort Lauderdale for more than 5 years back in the 1980s. Rather than focusing on being a woman, she focused instead on the law. Today, she's a preeminent brain injury specialist. Diane Weaver sat down with Florida Justice Association radio host Harvey Bennett in December 2017 to discuss her trailblazing career, the process she uses during trial that she credits with her success, and how to handle losing a case with grace.
Diane, you've been practicing law for several decades, and you've distinguished yourself as one of the eminent trial lawyers in traumatic brain injury cases. That has to be particularly difficult work, both professionally and personally, emotionally.
It's very challenging because the medicine, when I started doing this in the 80s, is like the Dark Ages. We have changed, and I literally take one day a week and read nothing but brain injury or medical literature about what's going on in brain injury. I got started doing this when my mother went into the windshield of a car. And it wasn't because of a lawsuit, but she was a very successful professional woman, and she was never the same. So I started trying to find out what could help my mother, and would pick up the phone and call neuroscientists, call doctors, et cetera, asking them to explain the medicine. And I ended up being invited and serving on the board of the Brain Injury Association Foundation in Washington, D.C. Jim Brady was the president when I was on the board for 6 years.
President Reagan's former press secretary who was wounded in the assassination attempt.
Exactly. Yes, he was the president. Quite a person. Great sense of humor. But I was the only attorney on the board. Everybody else on the board was affiliated, either a medical doctor or a research scientist or something in the profession that dealt with the research of it or the treatment of it. So every time I'd go to a board meeting, they used to laugh because at lunch I would grab one of the people and they would laugh and say, Diane's getting a free consultation again.
Now, had you already been a lawyer at that point?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I just got into it because of my mother, then developed such a love for the science. And I also think that brain injury is the worst injury anyone can have. It robs you of yourself. It takes away so many times your sense of self-worth and your sense of identity. And it's just it's a fabulous, fabulous people with such great courage the ones that I've dealt with that have brain injury that are learning to deal with it.
And you've had such tremendous success with the expertise that you've developed. It includes an $18 million verdict in a civil rights action where a man with traumatic brain injury from a motorcycle accident was misdiagnosed as a schizophrenic and locked up in a state mental hospital for more than 3 years.
Almost 3 years. And worse than that, he was tied in 4- and 5-point restraints when he was in there because what he was having was temporal lobe seizures, which manifest themselves as rages, explosive discontrol. And it's a well-known to anyone who is involved in brain injury that that type of seizure can manifest itself in that way. And they didn't recognize it. So they just tied him down and put a feeding tube down his throat. They humiliated him. What they were doing was against the law because you can't keep someone tied down like that for more than 24 or 48 hours. So they put in their records, and this was Florida Department of Health and Human Services, a state hospital, that he was under treatment A, special treatment. So it didn't say in the records that he was being tied down. Mm-hmm. So it was a 12-week trial. We had 21 defendants because in civil rights you can't sue the state of Florida or the hospital. If it's a state run, you have to sue the individual. And the jury found 17 of them responsible for what happened to Aaron. So he'll never be the same, but he has sufficient funds to have a very comfortable life in a residential facility.
You've also been involved as a volunteer on local brain injury support groups and associations too.
Yes, I have. I served on the national board. I served on the Florida Brain Injury Association board. I've served on numerous, the North America Brain Injury Society. I've served on its board. Just various groups that are involved in both research and funding. I have lost a daughter, my youngest daughter, and I used to do adoptions in Fort Lauderdale to say thank you for my adopted children, and I would do them for free. And Elizabeth was dropped off at a social service agency. They knew she had brain damage from being subjected to drugs and alcohol in the womb. And they called me and asked me if I would assist in finding a place for her, finding placement for her, because she'd been dropped off. So I went home and talked to my husband, and I said, I know all about brain injury, honey. Let's adopt her. Let's bring her home. And we did. And I didn't know anything. It's a lot different to talk about it than it is to live it every day. But Elizabeth was fabulous. We lost her. But during the time that she was with us, she was a happy, sweet little girl. So when we lost her, we had finally gotten her into semi-independent living, and we gave her our oldest dog. And she called me after she'd been there a couple of weeks, and she said, Mommy, she called me Mommy right up to the day she died. She was 29. She said, Mommy, thank you for giving me Holly, because I finally have someone who needs me. So what we have done is we have formed Liz's Project, and we take service dogs, and we take dogs from Humane Society and rescue dogs, and we train them to be service dogs for brain-injured children, and we call it Saving Two Lives with Four Paws. And so that's our memory, and that's Liz's legacy to this world.
That's terrific. Take us back to the beginning. What made you want to be a lawyer?
My best friend in ninth grade, Melinda Popham, her grandfather was the premier trial lawyer for Kansas City. That's where I grew up. And so we would go down on breaks and holidays when he was trying a case. We would go down and watch him try cases. And I watched him take it a courtroom so that the jury, whenever anything happened, they would look to him to see if he approved or disapproved of it. And I decided then, I said, I want to be a trial lawyer. That's what I want to do. And I never lost it. Although when I graduated from high school and was going into college, women were not trial lawyers. They had other opportunities, but not to be trial lawyers. And when I went to law school, I was lucky enough to obtain a position as an attorney on the staff of the federal court in Miami. And I worked for Judge Peter Fay, who's now on the 11th Circuit. He's my mentor. For sure, he's my mentor. But usually, if you're a federal law clerk, that opens any door to the next step. And I had a lot of doors open for me, but not to be a trial lawyer. People wanted me to be a librarian. They wanted me to be domestic. They wanted me to do appeals. They wanted me to do family law, but not to be a trial lawyer because they thought a woman cannot succeed in moving a jury to make a verdict in her favor. Can't be done. So I finally got a shot at a small three-person firm in Fort Lauderdale. They did insurance defense work. There were no other women. I was the only woman practicing jury trial law in Fort Lauderdale for over 5 years. They called me the skirt. They would say, you've got a case with the skirt. I would go into hearings. There were no women judges. And I would go into hearings, and the judge would sit at his desk and look at the male opposing counsel, and they would first have a conversation about, how'd you like those dolphins, or guess what I did on the back nine, or whatever, not even acknowledging I was in the room. It made me a better lawyer because I really learned to take the law in and never assume anything, no matter how ordinary it's going to be. But finally, about 7 years into the practice, a female judge was appointed to the bench. And the first time I walked in for a hearing in front of her, she looked up and she said, I like that dress. Yes, I said, yes. But it was a very interesting early time because I was the only female.
So you were a pioneer.
Yeah, I've had people call me that, and I keep saying I'm not that old.
What were the most important influences in your life growing up? What lessons did you learn that prepared you for law or that have guided your career over the last several decades?
Well, my mom and dad were incredible. They just, all they wanted me to do was do the best I could. When I told them I wanted to be a trial lawyer, they said, well, nobody else is trial lawyers. That doesn't mean you shouldn't try it. But what else do you like if that doesn't work out? So I got my undergraduate degree in elementary education and taught for a year and then went to law school. When I couldn't get a job as a trial lawyer, even though I'd been a federal law clerk, my parents were incredible. They said, you can do everything you want. And my mother said, honey, quit worrying about being a woman. Just worry about being a good trial lawyer. And from that, I went forward.
That is a great lesson. Did you have a mentor?
Yes, I did. Peter Fay, the Honorable Peter Fay. He's now on the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals. I was his first law clerk, and we worked together. He had never handled admiralty and bankruptcy, so he assigned me and said, I'm to teach him everything about admiralty there is to know, and he assigned the other law clerk to teach him about bankruptcy. I'm so grateful I got admiralty. I did for many years as a young lawyer handle admiralty cases in Fort Lauderdale because all the people that buy those big fancy boats down there get in lots and lots of trouble. So,
how did you go about honing your trial skills?
I did several things. One, after the case was over and when there would be nothing more in front of that judge, I would go back to that judge and say, can you tell me how I can improve as a trial lawyer? I remember one of them told me, it's clear you know the laws of evidence, but just because you have the right to object doesn't mean you have to. And I would go into doctors and do the same thing. I would go into doctors and I would say, will you please help me to understand this area of medicine? And it was amazing how giving all of these people were to give me their time to work with me. That's basically what I did.
How on that same topic, how helpful or hurtful can self-reflection be?
Well, I think if it's done right, it's helpful always. Always. I've learned more from the cases I've lost than I've learned from the cases I won, because when I win, I just go on and celebrate and I'm real happy. When I'm lost, I go back over and over and over again. What could have made it happen differently?
Figure out what went wrong.
And I think that's helpful.
What's the most rewarding part of being a plaintiff's attorney?
Helping people who need help. It's just fabulous. I am lucky enough in my career that I have had case in which either a family member or the client say that you've saved my life or you saved my son's life. That's wonderful.
Is there one skill or one key to your success?
Empathy. One of the things I try to teach lawyers is that you do not want to deal with sympathy with the jury because sympathy makes us feel uncomfortable. You want to deal with empathy. You want to take time to you personally first and then get the jury to walk in the shoes of the person or the family whose future they're trying to decide. So I think it's empathy.
Was there a point in your career or in your life where you just didn't think you were going to make it?
Yeah, about the same time my mother said, quit worrying about being a woman and worry about being a good trial lawyer. Because I just absolutely couldn't get a job that would allow me to try cases.
Right.
In fact, in my first job, I was the first woman to ever try a defense case, because I did that early in my career, on behalf of Travelers. First woman they'd ever let try a jury trial, and they had to go all the way to home office to get permission for me to try it.
Wow.
It was really different back then.
Well, what have been the secrets to your day-to-day success? You're in a very tough profession to begin with. Adding to that, you were a woman, a trailblazer.
I decided early on that my number one goal would be that when somebody saw my name on a pleading that was filed in court, their response would be, this one's going to be done right. I'm tenacious. I never let go. I never quit reading. When I'm in trial, I go back over all of the documents, all of the evidence every night, again from scratch, so that when something comes up in the middle of trial, I can remember, hey, there was a deposition that we took about a year ago that dealt with this. So I think it's tenaciousness and preparation.
How do you handle disappointment?
Wow. Better than I used to. When I lost my first trial, my husband didn't think I was going to be able to speak for a week.
And he's a fellow attorney
as
well.
And he's a fellow attorney.
You practice together.
He's an appellate lawyer. He keeps me out of trouble. I love the courtroom and he loves the law. I think I just learned to learn from it instead of dwell on it and look back and see what could be changed, which is pretty much the way I've matured. When I face a problem in life, my immediate response is, what can we do to solve this? What can we do to change it?
Is there one particular case that you'll never forget or one that was especially significant or notable so far in your career?
There's many. One is the one of the little boy that was tied down in 5-point restraints. That case came to me because the judge that was handling the complaints that were being made about how he was being treated, although he didn't have the full story, told the public defender, why don't you go see if Diane Weaver will represent this young man individually? And so I jumped in and did. And by that time, we found out he had been released, and then he had spooked at a public grocery store and run down the sidewalk in front of Publix and knocked over an 86-year-old woman as she hit the ground and died. So he's back in custody now. And by the way, her family came to the trial to support him.
Wow.
They're beautiful people. But this time they didn't put him down there being tied down because there'd been an investigation. So they sent him to the North Florida State Mental Hospital, and they put him in a room that was about 4 by 6 with a small light bulb up on top, no windows. Could see him through a door. He wasn't tied down anymore, but his brother finally got a court order to go see him. And his brother came into this room, and Aaron put his hands up like that because the lights were bothering his eyes and backed into a wall where he was sitting in his own urine and his own feces. And this is the way he was being treated by the state of Florida.
Wow.
So we got him from the verdict into a private residential center. His parents were able to quit work and move close to that center, and they broke his mind. He'll never live independently again, but he doesn't live where people are cruel.
How do you balance your professional life with your personal and family life?
I feel guilty all the time. I mean, there was always something that I wanted to do more for the kids or something I wanted to do more for the case or whatever. But my kids, I'm telling you, they're wonderful. They're wonderful. They went through the normal teen thing where I said that, how do you think I do all these things in life? And they said, we have no idea.
Well, at least they were empathetic.
That's right. But we had family dinner every night. Now, when I say every night, if I was on the road or something, but every night I would come home, I would cook dinner, and they would sit at the table in the kitchen and do their homework, and we had that time together, and we insisted on family dinner right through the time. We still do, if they're here. We still sit down and have family dinner. So, and then every Saturday I would take one of them with me on errands. We'd do whatever I had to do. I'd just take one. So we had some of the greatest talks when there were just two of us in the car.
Of
the greatest talks.
Yeah. Plus you're teaching them life skills at the same time.
How
to shop and budgeting and dealing with other people. And how has your involvement with the Florida Justice Association impacted your career?
When I became active in the association, and again, that was later than most, I realized that the Florida Justice Association is probably the last strong institution to preserve the right of civil jury trial for the individual. And if you read the Federalist Papers, there was a very strong argument about the civil jury trial, not the criminal, but the civil jury trial. And they finally to decide that they would require civil jury trials be available because they decided that the civil jury trial is the greatest protection against oppression of the powerful that we have in this country. Mm-hmm. You see, you can vote and you can have that, but you can go into a courtroom and have 12 or 6 people decide what's right or wrong, no matter who is in front of them. You are an equal. It's a very powerful part of our country to address indifference and irresponsibility and lack of accountability, things like that.
Mm-hmm. What words of wisdom have proven true to you along this journey?
My dad said, if a man will cheat you for a nickel, what do you think he'd do for a dollar?
That's a good one.
My dad also told me that, you know, if you're lucky enough to be given intellectual success, that you have a responsibility to do that. And sometimes when you fight the bad guys win. But if you don't fight them, they win all the time.
Mm. What's your view on the future of the legal profession? You have any concerns?
I'm very concerned. When I was a new young lawyer, I had a mentor. I think probably most of the people that you're interviewing or talked to had a mentor. I remember my mentor told me, if you give your word to another lawyer and there's a misunderstanding about what you said, you stand by what that lawyer says you said, because it's your responsibility to live up to whatever communications you did. And that was my mentor. Judge Fay was such a great mentor. He would call me long after I last. Whenever he'd read something in the paper or hear something, he'd always call. And he'd say, hi, Diane, this is Pete Fay. And I'd always say, I'm sorry, I don't know a Pete. I know a judge. But he's always been a great mentor. He's a fabulous man. One of the greatest joys I have in looking at the current profession and looking back is all the women that have joined the profession. I was the only one in Fort Lauderdale. There were many women around the country who were the only one in their area. And I gave a speech in New York last week on brain injury, and I looked out in the audience, and I would guess maybe a third to 40% of the attendees were women. And that gave me another yes! Glad to hear it. I think the profession is better having more women being involved.
We've talked about the law. Let's talk ethics. Do the ends sometimes justify the means?
Never. 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 Because when you do that, then you're getting on the same level with the bad guys. And you lose something about yourself when you do that. So never.
What one piece of advice would you have for incoming lawyers today?
Your reputation is so important. You want to be able that when you're dealing with a fellow lawyer, the judge, when you're dealing with a client, when you're dealing with an expert, you want to have that person have confidence in you, not only in your skills, but in your ethics. Because you will find that people will be much more open with you, and I'm not talking about bad people, I'm talking about people that want to be good too, will be much more open to you and work with you much better if they believe you're ethical.
How would you like to be remembered?
Well, I think I'd like to be remembered as someone who was lucky enough to get a high intelligence, and I use that intelligence to try and make things better for others.
Diane Weaver, you are a titan of trial. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Paul Jess. We hope you enjoyed listening to this Titans of Trial episode. If you're not already a member, we'd like to invite you to join the Florida Justice Association. Please visit us on the web at floridajusticeassociation.org or drop us a line at radio@floridajusticeassociation.org.
Thank you for listening to this Titans of Trial podcast, sponsored by the Florida Justice Association Research and Education Foundation, promoting the study and understanding of Florida's civil justice system and how its preservation benefits consumers, victims, and all Floridians. Learn more at floridajusticeassociation.org.